Today's episode of Vital Voices is brought to you in part by Oaktree Medical Center, Kalina Insurance Limited, and Vala Security. Welcome to Vital Voices, the podcast where we delve into the matters that shape our health, relationships, and overall well-being. I'm your host, Alexis Burrows, and today we're diving into the fascinating world of attachment styles and their impact on romantic relationships. Joining us is Harrison Thompson, a therapist, life and relationship coach, and an insightful voice on how we can foster healthier, more secure connections with our loved ones. So whether you're looking to strengthen your relationship, navigate challenges, or better understand yourself, this episode is packed with practical insights and actionable advice. So let's explore how we can all move towards secure attachment and better relationships. Welcome to the show, Harrison.
I appreciate being here, man. Thank you for having me.
So, you know, we're in February now and this episode comes out, thinking about Valentine's and relationships and all of those things. You know, it's the month of love and it's the month of heart health. So we wanted to be a little cheeky and kind of think about it from, you know, two standpoints. So we're doing a number of episodes this month, two that are dedicated towards the relationship side of things and then two that are more practical in terms of your regular everyday heart health. So we wanted to get you on to talk about attachment styles. For our listeners, if you're not familiar, this has been something that's become particularly topical, I think, on social media over the last year or two. Everybody's starting to realize that there's so many different ways that you can analyze right. your personality, how you interact with others. And so I wanted to get you on to help, you know, kind of cut through some of the noise that's out there and make it a little bit more easy for our listeners to understand.
Yeah. So, you know, in the psychological field, we really describe the attachment styles as the way we interact with the world around us. Mm-hmm. And I think it explains a great degree how we interpret love, how we interpret rejection, mm-hmm. how we aim to feel seen, heard, and understood, and how we aim to minimize maybe pain and our experiences with pain mm-hmm. through interactions, through setting boundaries, or in a very volatile way, cutting people off and being mm-hmm. very toxic.
Right.
And there's about four main ones. Some fields of study split those into different groups, but by and large, attachment styles consist of four types. I don't know if you want to dive into it right away.
We'll get to that in a second. That's just for, so I know you have quite a following on social media,
yeah.
but for anybody who might not be familiar, just give us a quick backstory, you know, introduce yourself, share yes. a little bit about your journey into the space of therapy and particularly relationship coaching, because I imagine in our culture, in our community, that might be quite the minefield to navigate.
Yeah, man, my introduction into therapy was so hard. Coming from a guy who was working in offshore banking, who had a love for psychology, mm-hmm. but that wanted to go and play professional football. So that's the framework. I get a football scholarship to go off to school, and I use that opportunity to study psychology. I come back home, graduated, ready to go in my father's practice, relationship management, where I still am. Mm-hmm. And I did not see anybody for 3 years.
Oh, wow.
I thought that going off and becoming a therapist and seeing the kind of problems that's afflicting us in our country, me turning the sign on the door from closed to open, would have immediately just brought people in. Mm-hmm. But I very quickly realized, you know, we don't trust therapists in our culture per se. We go to our pastors, we go to mm-hmm. family members. And so I had to find a unique way to kind of break into that pre-existing culture to show people outside of your pastors, there's professional ways we can deal with issues of anxiety. Mm-hmm. We can help you deal with your relational challenges. We can help you heal from trauma. And I took to social media. Mm-hmm. I tried to find a middle ground between comedic relief and a lot of sound psychological principles. And sometimes I had to be a bit edgy in what I post to get the attention, to get the traction.
Right.
And, you know, that wasn't typically something that people in my field do. Mm-hmm. You know, as a therapist, we're supposed to stay very unbiased. But I realized that in my culture, if I wasn't able to present to my behaving people mm-hmm. some kind of familiarity, they would never buy into the idea of therapy.
Yeah. Like, we always like to say, you know, we don't take nothing seriously.
Right.
So
everything
even,
is a joke.
Even when you talk about serious topics, a lot of times you will find that there's that comedic touch to it or that some way to present it that's a little bit lighthearted. It kind of takes the edge off a little bit for people.
Right. It just helps people feel a little bit more comfortable addressing real issues. Mm-hmm. And I think it helps them feel a bit more vulnerable in doing so.
Okay.
So that's kind of been my brand ever since 2011. Mm-hmm. And I'm happy to say today, you know, I've stood the test of time. I stood through the trying period of people seeing if I'm for real. Mm-hmm. And I feel like my name has now gone to a place synonymous with mental health and relationships.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I think I started following you on Twitter a couple of years back, and I always found it interesting because it is an interesting space.
Yeah.
Because you know, mental health and things in that area are quite intense. And I've always found it interesting the way you try to navigate. Because like I said, I imagine that's quite the give and take in terms of, you know, you wanna give insightful commentary, but you also want to make it something where people feel like it's acceptable and it feels comfortable and it feels more like you're talking to your buddy at the bar.
Yes.
And then you have that comfort level, but you're actually talking to somebody who can give you real, sound, sensible advice. Not knocking your buddy at the bar, but you understand what I'm saying.
Of course, Matt. And you know, I think there's even an element of privacy. Mm-hmm. Do people want to come to a therapist who is so outspoken?
Right.
Who's posting things every day. Mm-hmm. I don't want to feel like he's putting my business out there. And it was kind of a trade-off. In order for me to get the word out there, I had to probably risk a lot of potential clients coming to me because mm-hmm. they just wanted someone maybe a bit more low-key.
Right.
So it was that navigating, that space between how do I market myself and then how do I be an effective therapist mm-hmm. at the same time.
Yeah.
Very interesting
thing. It feels like it's quite the tightrope to walk.
For sure.
So, like I said, let's dive back into our topic. So, attachment styles. You started to say there are four primary ones. So, walk us through the concept, how you would define it based on your, you know, interactions with clients and just your understanding, your knowledge of it. And then why is that important? Why is your attachment style important when it starts to parlay into romantic relationships?
Yeah, so I think everybody, as best as they can, is trying or attempting to be the best version of themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes we have a heart more so than we have the skills,
mm-hmm.
or sometimes we have the skills more so than we have the empathy and understanding of that human element.
Mm-hmm.
And so here comes attachment styles to help us make sense of that middle ground between these two things. And the attachment style that I think everybody is aiming for is the one called the secure attachment,
mm-hmm.
right? And as the name sounds, it embodies a person who is secure in who they are, secure in what they feel, and secure in the methodologies they use to go about getting their needs met.
Mm-hmm.
Usually, all of these attachment styles are born out of childhood.
Mm-hmm.
And so if we go back to a lot of what our early childhood experiences were, you can see the foundational contributions that built our unique attachment styles.
Right.
The other attachment style is called the anxious preoccupied attachment mm-hmm. style, defined, of course, by a preoccupation with the potential of what could go wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Always worrying about the status of relationships, wondering if things are going to be okay. It's very future-oriented.
Mm-hmm.
Third attachment style is a dismissive, avoidant attachment style, characterized, of course, by playing it safe, not over-investing yourself,
mm-hmm.
protecting one's heart by not giving one's heart away.
Right.
This is definitely the cutoff type.
Mm-hmm.
And then the last one, which can be considered the most volatile attachment style, is the fearful, anxious attachment style. There's a lot of different words that people in my field use, but that's one of the main words we use to describe this attachment style that's the worst of both.
Mm.
I am afraid of love and also anxious about not being loved. So what happens is it puts that individual in a very, very tricky position. Mm-hmm. They're often volatile, where the very same thing they say they want is also the same thing they're afraid of getting.
Mm-hmm.
And so you can imagine those kind of people with those kind of attachment styles struggle to maintain consistency in the relationship.
Because I imagine it's very difficult to navigate because it almost feels like you're at war with yourself.
Yes.
You know, I've done some research in this space.
Go for it, bro.
I'm going to hold it back for a second.
Yeah.
But it is interesting to see because it seems like from people watching and getting to understand this a little bit, it seems like there always tends to be a push and pull. And I don't know if this is just the opposites attract thing, mm-hmm. but you have a lot of avoidant and anxious kind of being drawn together. And you find a lot of relationships. Do you find there's a lot of relationships where that's the dynamic?
Oh, for sure. I think it starts off as one attachment style filling the gaps of the other one.
Mm-hmm.
So in the beginning, it seems like it's a great thing on paper.
Mm-hmm.
And then as feelings start to develop and you start to really get affected by this person, then you start to really see how you have to finesse this thing. You have to be honest about what your attachment style is
mm-hmm.
to, number one, be accountable to it. and then to also make the necessary compromise to foster a healthy relationship.
Mm-hmm.
So we often see in our field that that is something that takes place.
Okay. So you talked about a lot of this developing in childhood. What are some of the experiences or things that can happen in childhood that drive someone towards a particular type of attachment?
Yeah. So for example, secure attachments usually come from childhood environments where children and infants have their needs met in conjunction with ample love and affection.
Mm-hmm.
So the key word here is ample. What happens when we give kids extra love, love that they already have, but we're just giving them more?
Mm-hmm.
We free them from having to worry about getting more love.
Mm.
Okay, they kind of establish that this is a consistent stream, that this mm-hmm. is a consistent flow. And the confidence in that consistency allows that child to now explore the world.
Mm-hmm.
So because they know that they can return home at any time and get their love
mm.
and get their needs met, they're more bold in how they take risks.
Right. Because then what it becomes is they almost have an anchor point.
Yes.
And I guess that's kind of where the idea of secure comes into the naming of this, is that you have something that you always know is a safe space to come back to.
Yes. It's kind of like how people are drawn to certain restaurants where it almost seems like they're giving their food away
mm-hmm.
because it's just such a big portion for what I'm paying for.
Mm-hmm.
You start to trust in that being the normal, being mm-hmm. the standard. And so now I get to explore other things
right.
without worrying about losing home base.
Mm. Okay.
Yeah.
So for our listeners, how can someone go about trying to identify and figure out what their attachment style is? So some people would get to this point and they've heard you kind of explain it out and they'd already be able to, okay, I know I'm anxious or I know I'm avoiding. But what are some things that people can do to help figure that out?
Yeah, you got to look at the patterns of how you tend to respond to life.
Mm-hmm.
So for example, people with an anxious, preoccupied attachment, a lot of how they relate to the world is seen through perceived rejection.
Mm-hmm.
or perceived threat,
mm-hmm.
okay? Just like the avoidant attachment, but this one manifests a bit differently. People with this attachment style usually have a childhood where their needs were met in very unpredictable ways.
Mm.
So there was no real consistency in what mommy and daddy showed me on any given day. On Monday, I may get the good version of my parents.
Mm-hmm.
On Tuesday, I may get a version of my parents that don't care. On Wednesday, I may just get parents who are tired and done with the world.
Right.
And then on Thursday, I get parents who seem to be back to themselves. That kind of unpredictability to a child causes them to become preoccupied with if their needs will be met in the future.
Mm-hmm.
So these individuals are very, very prone to shifts in energy.
Mm-hmm.
When people start changing their disposition or when you have an argument, they snap into action and wonder, is this going to be the end of my relationship?
Right.
And so you find there is this constant desire for people with that attachment to need a constant stream of validation.
Mm-hmm.
Am I good? Do you still love me?
Mm-hmm.
Do you still care about me? And what ends up happening is being in a relationship with someone who's anxious and preoccupied can be very draining. Because if you're in a relationship with someone with this attachment, you can potentially get in trouble for being yourself. What they do is they use the independent actions of other people as a confirmation of their fears. So essentially, they start with a judgment.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to hurt me,
mm-hmm.
but when are you going to hurt me?
Right.
And they start looking for signs that you're going to hurt them.
Right.
And whether those signs are accurate or not, they will use it to support their judgment instead of challenging the judgment itself. And so I would actually say for people with this kind of attachment style, you have to look out for the pattern of prejudging people,
mm-hmm.
of thinking that everybody who comes into your life has ulterior motives, of thinking that every time you stand up for yourself and there's disagreements or we're not getting along, that that is an indication of failure.
Mm-hmm.
Not necessarily true.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
So what about avoidant? How does someone identify that?
Yes. So what's interesting with this attachment style, also developed in childhood, it happens when we seem to have some of our needs met while other needs are totally neglected.
Mm, okay.
But the problem is we don't know which needs are going to be met and which ones will be neglected. So we have to figure that out via trial by fire.
Mm-hmm.
So let's say you have a need and you attempt to get that need met by a parent. But the parent responds by saying, I'm a bit busy.
Mm-hmm.
So our brain has space to accommodate that. Mm-hmm. We say, life is real. I understand. I'll check in with you tomorrow. You check in tomorrow, and now you're met with a different kind of excuse. I'm tired. Mm-hmm. So first it was you're too busy. Now it's you're too tired. Okay. The third time you try to get your need met, they're not available. Some strange person picked you up from school. This is a friend of your mom. This is a cousin of your father. Mm-hmm. They said they'll reach back out when they're done. Then on the fourth day, parents make an attempt to say, hey, didn't you have a need? And at that point, that child starts to say, you know what, never mind. Mm-hmm. Because the pattern of you not being present and available for what my needs are tells me that it's no longer safe to signal that I actually have a need.
Because you're more sure that it's not going to happen than it's going to happen.
Yeah.
And therefore, you're like, okay, so maybe I just avoid that altogether.
Yes.
And kind of redirect that energy somewhere else.
Right.
Okay. So now that we have a little bit of an understanding of the different types of attachment styles, you know, again, this is something where there are videos popping up on TikTok and on YouTube, Instagram, all over the place, kind of, you know, giving people some insight into these different things.
Right.
What are some common misconceptions that people may have about attachment styles?
That they're by and large fixed. Mm. And that we're supposed to fit snugly in one attachment style versus another. Mm-hmm. You'll find, actually, you can find elements of your personality in life throughout all attachment styles, possibly, right? So it's not about just giving yourself a label that says you're doomed to be this for the rest of your life. Mm-hmm. But it's just learning to see which way your disposition leans.
Right.
Some people are born with anxious dispositions, mm-hmm. right? Maybe because that's the energy that they saw a lot of in their homes. Or they've had a lot of personal experiences where things just didn't go according to what was presented to me. Mm-hmm. And so it's not that one person is just solely an anxious, attached person or a dismissive person mm-hmm. or a fearful, anxious person. But we can all find elements of ourselves in all attachment styles.
Right.
But it's just about seeing and receiving what those patterns are for us.
Yeah. Because I imagine, too, some of that may be influenced even by, you know, just the season of life that you're in, right?
Right.
So if you're feeling some stress or traumatic influence from your career path or your schooling or, you know, something happens in your family or your close personal friends, all of those things can kind of influence it. And perhaps, you know, you may have this potential to vacillate depending on
right.
just how the rest of life is going at any given time.
Definitely. You got to learn how to differentiate between what is just a mood mm-hmm. and what is something that has just a little bit more permanence in my life.
Right.
Because you don't want to just say that because I'm feeling anxious today means I'm an anxiously attached person.
Right.
Sometimes you're just passing through anxiety. Mm. And it doesn't necessarily mean that it has taken up residency in your life.
Right. You know, it's interesting because I think a lot of times people, we look for definites, right? Mm-hmm. There are people who operate very, very clearly and easily in the grays that exist in the world. But I think a lot of people are looking for something to be able to, you want that definition,
right?
And I think that's probably a part of what leads them to saying, well, if this and this and this is true, then this is the attachment style that I have, and this is just how I am. And I wonder if that just makes it, for the good and bad of what it means for you, if that just makes it easier to say, well, this is just what I am.
Yeah.
And that way I don't have to deal with, well, I'm this way today and then I'm that way tomorrow. And then what does that mean?
I see. Yeah. You know, it's split down the middle in this community. If you go down the clinical route of psychology, mm-hmm. it starts off with a diagnosis and then we treat you according to that diagnosis.
Right.
If you go down the path of... the path I went down, cognitive behavioral therapy. We dynamically look at what all of the moving parts are mm-hmm. without really giving you a label to say that you're this or that. Mm-hmm. So I may not necessarily label you as bipolar, though there are bipolar tendencies there.
Right.
I may not necessarily label you as a narcissist, though there are narcissistic tendencies there. Mm-hmm. And the reason why some people in this field frown on the labels is that the label can sometimes cause individuals to seek that kind of thing out in their lives.
Right.
And to kind of create crutches for themselves where they now have a learned helplessness. Mm-hmm. In the same kind of way that we lean on our horoscopes mm-hmm. to say, well, you know, I'm a Taurus. Mm-hmm. This is who I am.
Right.
Or I'm a Scorpio.
That's the thing. That was the thing that came in my mind as you were describing, because I'm like, this is how some people are when they do the horoscope thing, which is just like, this is just the way I am because I fit into this literal, my birthday falls in this yes. window. And this now all of a sudden means that all these personality traits are just mine.
Right. And it's like, regardless of your horoscope, just be a better person, mm-hmm. right? Be disciplined. Be interested in actually growing and developing yourself beyond maybe the basics of what you entered into life
with. Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. So, you know, attachment styles obviously have a part to play in both platonic and romantic relationships. But being that we're in the month of love, I want to kind of focus in a little bit on how this plays on the romantic side of it. So how would you say that attachment styles influence relationship dynamics, and in particular, like some of the big ones like communication and conflict resolution, things like that?
Yeah. So I would say for a person who has not accepted what their particular kind of attachment style is, there's a tendency there to make people responsible for your happiness and peace.
Mm.
Where you engage in this kind of behavior modification, where you get other people to change who and what they are to make you feel more comfortable for something you're not addressing in your life. And so many times folks from that perspective don't even realize they're looking for salvation, when really they should be looking for a relationship, right? So someone from my perspective would say it's always best to heal, to get maybe a professional opinion on what's driving you to do what you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
So instead of expecting people to change, you can present who and what you are to people
mm-hmm.
and give them an opportunity to see if this is something that they can accommodate
right.
with their personality and character,
mm-hmm.
right? So in a perfect world, people would seek out healing first and then relationships.
Mm-hmm.
But unfortunately, man, people get into relationships and that reveals the need to heal.
Mm-hmm. And sometimes they know they need to heal, but then they look to the relationship to heal them.
Right. And it's like you can't really expect your partner to heal you. Your partner is going to show you the areas of your life maybe where you need to heal.
Mm-hmm.
Because who has more ability than them
mm-hmm.
to get you emotionally riled up, to hurt you, to affect you,
mm-hmm.
right? So I think that's a learning opportunity for a lot of people, but instead we use it to blame.
Yeah.
And that's unfortunate.
I saw this interesting video, I think it was on Shorts probably about a year or two ago. And there was a gentleman who was explaining the dynamic in relationships, and he compared it to a mirror. And he was like, you know, your partner is, he was talking about it from a biblical perspective. So he said your spouse is basically like looking in the mirror, and what you tend to see most often is all of the things you need to fix.
Right.
Because whatever is wrong on your side impacts and affects them. So it's almost like you see the wounds of, you know, where you're damaged and broken. And that's why, you know, it's not really wise to pursue the relationship as the methodology for healing, because it's sure. like, it's only going to reveal all of the broken and damaged parts of you that yes. still actually need to heal
yeah.
before you can really love someone from a pure place.
Yeah, the average human response to discomfort is to soothe.
Mm-hmm.
You want to go down the path of least resistance,
mm-hmm.
the thing that makes us feel best. And this is why I say a mental health day can be one of the most challenging days you ever have, because it's you choosing to actually face what's broken
mm-hmm.
instead of just trying to feel better about what's broken. And a lot of folks, they settle on just feeling better instead of being better
mm-hmm.
because it's cheap.
Yeah.
Right? Why spend $500 for the name brand when I can spend $50 for the knockoff
right.
and seemingly get the same effect?
Boy, and that's the thing, because, you know, a lot of people, when they say they're taking a mental health day, they're just going to go sit up on the beach, you know,
yeah.
and maybe have a daiquiri or, you know, or go and like catch a movie or whatever it is. But it's like, it's not, I don't know. The people that I know who say they take mental health days
right.
is usually not actively trying to fix whatever may be wrong. It's just, like you said, you're seeking soothing, you're seeking comfort.
I call it bougie avoidance, right? Because indulgence doesn't mean that you're healing. Indulgence doesn't mean that you're accepting things. Indulgence doesn't even mean that you're moving the marker on what's been broken in your life. To do these things, you have to get comfortable with feeling uncomfortable so that you don't make the presence of uncomfortable emotions the enemy.
Mm-hmm.
But when people who've been so used to soothing are finally forced to face those uncomfortable emotions,
mm-hmm.
they usually tend to look at the person who brought that to them as the problem.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of using that person to see that maybe this was always with me from the first place.
Right.
So it is a mirror. We do have opportunities to learn if we so choose to mm-hmm. receive that.
I hope you're enjoying this episode of Vital Voices. We're going to take a quick break for some words from our sponsors, and we'll be right back. Gentlemen, it's time to take charge of your health with Oak Tree Medical Center. We provide comprehensive prostate care at affordable prices, from prostate-specific antigen tests to prostate ultrasounds to advanced prostate MRIs. We've got you covered. Need further evaluation or treatment? Oak Tree Surgical Suites offers biopsies and in-house surgery. Our team of experts is here for you every step of the way. Visit us at Oak Tree Medical Center on East Street South and Prince Charles Drive, or for surgical procedures, find us at Oak Tree Surgical Suites, top of the hill, Mackey Street. Call us today at 322-1145 or visit oaktreemedicalcenter.com. Oak Tree Medical Center. Caring, compassionate, complete.
Pay your premiums anytime, anywhere, 24/7 with Galena's online payment portal. View payment history, set up recurring payments, download receipts for your life, health, auto, home, and marine policies. Got outstanding balances? Check them online and pay instantly. Guests can even pay for their loved ones' policies. Save time today by registering for fast, easy payments every time you log in. Visit Kalina.com to pay today. Kalina, always here, always open, 24/7.
Discover the ultimate in personalized healthcare with the Oak Tree Primary Plus program. Enjoy comprehensive primary care, annual physicals, lab and imaging discounts, mental health screenings, and more, all tailored to meet your health needs. With flexible payment options, exceptional care has never been more accessible. Join today and take control of your health journey. Call 816-4-OPP, that's 816-4677, or visit oaktreemedicalcenter.com. Oak Tree Primary Plus. Are you down with OPP? Valor Security. Our brand is honor. With quality services and professional treatment, we provide security you can trust. Whether it's protecting your home, securing your business, or safeguarding schools and construction sites, we're here day and night to keep you safe. From private event security to personalized escorts and expert consultations, our team is committed to excellence. Choose Valor Security, where honor, professionalism, and peace of mind go hand in hand. Call us today at 359-2005 or 605-7424 for security solutions tailored to your needs.
Ladies, at Oak Tree Medical Center, your health is our priority. From early detection to advanced treatment options, our comprehensive breast care services are here to support you every step of the way. With locations at East Street South, Prince Charles Drive, and our state-of-the-art surgical suites and MRI, top of the hill Mackey Street, we're right where you need us. Because when it comes to your breast care, you deserve the best care. And remember, the Million Mammogram movement continues. Call us today at 322-1145 or visit oaktreemedicalcenter.com to learn more. Oak Tree Medical Center. Caring. Compassionate. Complete.
Welcome back to Vital Voices. Let's continue our conversation.
Right. But then, you know, as we see a lot of times, in many different types of relationships, we do have challenges with conflict resolution.
Yeah.
Just culturally for us as Bahamians, we see it every time we see, you know, the news and the murder count goes up. It's like you're seeing more and more the issues that we have with conflict resolution.
Yeah.
Because I imagine someone who's avoidant is not necessarily going to be seeking to find the solution in a problem. They're going to try and find a way to not have this conversation at all.
Yeah.
And on the flip side, someone who's anxious may be like, hey, no, like, we really need to have this conversation. Like, we need to have it like 2 weeks ago, and we still ain't had it yet, so we need to have it now. Mm. And that brings about, I imagine, a lot of challenges in trying to work through relationship problems.
Yeah, man. You think about an avoidant, attached person. They're going to try and be an island unto themselves.
Mm-hmm.
They want to be able to supply their own water, their own light. They want to be able to do everything for themselves,
mm-hmm.
because their priority is safety. But here comes the issue now. When I'm connecting with a person and I'm starting to develop feelings, I realize I'm giving a part of that safety up,
mm-hmm.
for love.
Right.
And so what ends up happening now, is there a middle ground where I can still be safe and love at the same time?
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't really exist.
Right. No, because I mean, real relationship is a part of it is built on vulnerability.
Right.
It's that ability to sit back and say, okay, so I know that I'm opening myself up potentially to pain. I'm giving this person enough ammunition to hurt me if they so decided to. And I'm deciding to do it anyway because I'm interested in showing this person love and having the relationship and having that develop and change and transform over time.
Yes.
But it becomes very interesting, the dynamics of it, when you start to talk about all of these different things that do have strong influences in how we engage with one another.
Yeah.
So what are some signs that your specific attachment style or issues may be causing challenges in your relationship? Like, what are some of the warning signs people should look out for to be like, hold on, this is something that I may need to address?
Yeah, when you have to start preempting everything,
mm-hmm.
when it's like, I have to think so carefully before I speak. I have to wonder if me doing what I need to do is going to be misinterpreted as an attack.
Mm-hmm.
Or me having other important relationships in my life will be interpreted as though I don't care about you anymore.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's when we start losing peace,
mm-hmm.
that who we are and what we are is okay. That's an indicator that your attachment style may be getting in the way of you receiving the truth of what's truly going on.
Mm.
Okay? We tend to look at that as just maybe this person isn't compatible with me.
Mm-hmm.
When it's like even the person who is compatible with you, they're going to introduce challenges into your life.
Mm-hmm.
And they're going to reveal to you, what is the relationship you have with your parents? Do you have good boundaries with them?
Mm-hmm.
Are you good in dealing with rejection? Do you take things personally more than you do seriously?
Mm-hmm.
So whenever you find that things are starting to get super personal, where everything seems to be a direct attack on your being, on your mm-hmm. worth, on your value, it's likely that you're the problem. you gotta press pause to address that.
Yeah, when it's everybody else's fault,
yeah.
it usually means it's probably your fault. Because mm-hmm. at that point, it can't be that everyone else in your life is the issue, right?
Exactly.
Unless you've made really, really bad decisions in your life in terms of who you surrounded yourself with.
And we know these kind of people, and it's not to bully anybody, but social media has given us such an insightful window into people's lives.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of folks are on war paths and they don't even realize it.
Mm-hmm.
If you go down a person's profile page or timeline and you look at the kind of content they're sharing,
mm-hmm.
and a lot of times the biases start to leak out and mm-hmm. you kind of get to see this person has a grudge.
Right.
Or this person obviously has issues with women or men
mm-hmm.
or issues with someone of the opposite sex. And I think in this world where you can find anything to support what it is you stand on,
mm-hmm.
you have to be so very careful to maintain that middle ground of unbiased truth
mm-hmm.
so that you don't fall victim into just this unrealistic way of viewing life.
Yeah. I think that's one of the dangers of social media is it's very, anything that you're looking for in terms of to support a particular viewpoint or a particular belief, you will find it online.
Yeah,
because okay. every sort of mentality or worldview exists in that space, and they're there and it's visible. And you're like, no, but these particular people, and then you find this comfort, like I'm not alone, and therefore I'm right.
Right.
And I think that sometimes presents the same danger that you're talking about is that you know, rather than kind of taking a look at yourself to be like, no, what? How can I be better today, tomorrow, next week? It's No, I'm right. And I have righteous indignation in my rightness that I can say, no, I don't have to change. I don't have to think about what may be wrong. This group of people that I found online, this community that agrees with me, is enough.
Yeah.
And therefore, I'm as wrong as I might be, I feel very firm in my rightness.
Yeah, man, there are some elaborate structures that are designed to keep us living in denial.
Mm-hmm.
Like, when we call a certain friend for a piece of advice, we know what that kind of advice is going to be long before we call them.
Mm-hmm.
So what's driving us to call them?
Right.
Why did we call that friend over this friend?
Mm-hmm.
It's because I think we know instinctively what to avoid so that we can stay in good standing
right.
with our convictions.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, as Bahamian people, I think we can get prideful and we can get very entitled with what it is we think we deserve.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes that really stops us from receiving the kind of wisdom needed to help us change our lives for the better.
Mm.
So when that is now on stream, the only thing that will show you that you need to change is crisis.
Right.
The only thing that will show you need to change is blow up and break down.
Mm-hmm.
And if the only time we're changing is when there is a breakdown, it means we've become irresponsible in managing our lives.
Yeah. You know, you mentioned earlier, for individuals who don't have or who are not securely attached,
mm-hmm.
You mentioned that, you know, your attachment style is not something that's fixed. There, it is possible to either, and I imagine it's either intentionally or unintentionally shift where you sit in terms of that spectrum. So if someone was looking at themselves and he's like, I realize that I am anxiously attached, or I am avoidant dismissive, and they say to themselves, well, I want to move towards being securely attached. What does that process look like? Like, what are some steps that people can take to say, well, you know, I don't like the way this is. How do I move towards something that is healthier and safer and better for not just me, but for the people that I engage in relationship with?
Yeah. So you can quickly look at what is your relationship with A, taking risk, and B, trying to gain control. Because a lot of our attachment styles is us trying to actually manifest outcomes or trying to prevent something from happening. So someone who's an anxiously attached person and wants to become more secure, there's usually an element that they're trying to control that they don't have the power to control. And what ends up happening is they're seeking this control out via behavior modification in other people. And usually when you experience someone that's trying to change who and what you are, you're going to resist that. Mm-hmm. You're going to rebel against that. And so that anxious person has to recognize that control was never something they had. What they had was the perception of control, but nothing more. And I think it's so interesting because the perception of control feels like real control. Mm-hmm. Like when we lock our doors in the night to go to sleep, the perception is that we're safe. But you never know if you're really safe until there's a threat.
Right.
And so until there's a threat, we're choosing to believe the perception as real. So I would advise someone who has an anxious attachment or a preoccupied attachment to work on releasing control.
Okay.
And wherever there's an abundance of fear, the antithesis is that there will always be an abundance of trying to control something. So someone who is now avoidant and dismissive, I would actually help them build a relationship with risk.
Okay.
People have to understand that when you're dealing with relationships, the percentage of risk is fixed. What we do wrong is we try to lower that percentage to become more attractive. But what we have to do is we have to learn to build our risk tolerance to take that risk and be okay with whether it works out or whether it doesn't. Right? So I'll draw a parallel to gambling. I'm not in support of it, but gambling works best when you're okay with losing. Because if you're okay with losing, it means you know when to stop. And it means that the experience is what you're after, not necessarily winning.
Right.
But if you have to win when you're gambling, it means you've already lost. Because now you're not going to know when to stop. You're going to try to recoup your losses. You're likely to end up in more debt than when you started.
Right.
Because you're chasing. It means you never were okay with it not working out to begin with.
Right.
So people who are avoidant, I would actually help them to build their risk tolerance so that they don't always need the next attempt at what they're doing to work out. And they can still be the same person coming out of that.
Okay. How can partners then support each other in this, right? So if you have two people who have either because they've walked into your office or, you know, they've done their online research, so help them God. Right. But they've come to the conclusion that, you know, we want to be better. How can partners help each other in moving towards a more secure attachment?
Universally, we can increase our empathy and compassion. Empathy is your ability to literally feel what it is your spouse or partner is feeling by walking in their shoes. But compassion takes it one step further. While empathy feels what they're feeling, compassion tries to understand the nature of the person who is feeling what they're feeling. Right? So imagine being bedridden and you're a guy who likes to be physical. You love working out. You don't feel good unless you're moving. Empathy is someone saying, man, that really sucks.
Right.
I feel for you because I know you like to work out. But compassion goes a little bit further and says, because I know you like to move, here are some bands that I bought you so that you can work out while being in the bed. And when someone is giving you compassion, they have totally immersed themselves in the being of who you are. And that's called impact, because when you experience a person being compassionate, you almost have no words. It's like you were in my head.
Right.
It's like you understand where I was coming from. And for the first time, I didn't have to defend myself. So I think if we can learn to see that we're different, we can stop expecting ourselves out of each other. Then we can empower ourselves to now see how can I love you more properly according to what you are. And it also opens up that gate where if you need something I'm not comfortable giving, I can now learn how to give it over time by leaning on you for direction. So I think if we can increase our empathy and compassion in relationships, we can put ourselves in a position to be a better support system.
Okay. You know, I think you've talked about it off and on as we've gone through the conversation to this point about cultural norms and how society kind of plays a part in this. But, you know, I guess more specifically, how does our culture, the day-to-day culture that we experience here, influence attachment styles and relationship expectations?
Yeah, I think, unfortunately, our culture has normalized a lot of dysfunctional things as okay. And it stopped us from seeing the need to correct problematic behaviors.
Okay.
And so we have this culture where we're talking about being better. And we want to be better. And there's the nuances of people wanting to be better. I'm going to my therapist. I'm taking a mental health day. I'm drinking a green smoothie. But you don't see the results to actually see that we're growing as a culture. So it means that to some degree, our culture has enabled us in being okay with this dysfunction. And it's a weird space to be because now when you decide to call that dysfunction out, you run the risk of being a villain. You run the risk of now being public enemy number one.
Right.
And in a culture that doesn't always support that, are you willing to take the risk in being exiled, you know, or blackballed for the sake of standing up for what is right? So it presents a very unique set of challenges for people who say that they actually want to be better. Some people just up and leave the culture altogether.
Right.
Because they just don't want to deal with the bureaucracies of what we normalize. And then other people say, well, you're going to fight wherever you go.
Right.
You might as well fight where you're at home. You know, so you really got to determine what is in it for you, what's your convictions, and then based on those two things, fight where you need to fight.
Yeah, I think it's interesting, you know, that last part, because I think I've had a couple of conversations with a particular friend of mine at various points around this concept of, you know, self-awareness and the lack thereof, right? Because you say, you know, knowing what you want or what you desire or what you're able to tolerate, all of those sorts of things. But I think a lot of times people have a distinct lack of self-awareness.
For sure.
So what role does that play? Like being able to be self-aware and being actually interested in personal growth play in cultivating healthier relationships?
Yeah, we think about self-awareness as the signal that something is up. Right? Self-awareness starts by our ability to embrace the emotionality in our being. So if I cannot see that I'm tired, I never seek out rest. If I cannot see that I am hungry, I never seek out food.
Right.
What we have done as a sign of strength is we have numbed those emotional responses to somehow come off as though we're tough. That I don't need to eat like you because I'm strong. I don't need the same amount of sleep as you because I'm tough. And we condition ourselves to ignore the signs that are showing us that something is up. And now we wonder why is it that we are so removed from being able to change our circumstances. So it's all about being able to reconnect with that reality that exists in you. It's just, can you take pause long enough to feel what you need to feel? Can you look in the mirror long enough to actually see what's going on? The last global time we were all forced to do that was with COVID-19. We were stripped totally of our autonomy to do, to work, to travel, to move freely. And for a lot of us, that was the first time we saw truths that we were so used to just running away from. And for a lot of us, it was uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Because it didn't align with that narrative I was used to for myself. And so self-awareness can be very uncomfortable, but it is what it's the first step needed for anybody who says that they are interested in growth and improving and healing.
Yeah. I know I found it so interesting the amount of relationships, both unmarried and married that broke down and ended during the pandemic.
Right.
You heard a lot of people talk about, you know, they spend so much time cooped up in the same space with their spouse or with their partner, and they realize, I don't really like it that much.
That's right.
You know, and it was interesting to see, because I imagine it, like you said, it kind of forced you to face some things because there was nowhere to run to. There was no, you know, girls' night out. There wasn't any, oh, I go on by the bar with the boys. There wasn't, oh, I go on the basketball court. Oh, those things didn't exist.
Well, you shouldn't.
And, well, that's a whole different story. But yeah, the idea being that, you know, with those sort of escape hatches taken away, it really forced people into this pressure cooker of everything that you have is just this relationship in this moment, in this house or in this apartment. And a lot of people cracked under the pressure. Yeah. And it's sad looking at it from the other side, because that's for people who are married short term, long term. You saw a lot of that happen during that time. And I think it did speak to, like you said, this lack of self-awareness and not being able to really see what is wrong and then therefore seeking to fix it.
Yeah.
I think that's good. It's like, if you don't know that you're tired, you're not going to seek rest. I think that's very helpful for people to think about, because if you don't see the problem, you're not going to look for the solution.
Right. It's a cue, right?
And
it's not the anger that's the problem. It's anger pointing you to what the problem is.
Mm-hmm.
It's not anxiety that's the problem. It's what that's pointing to as what the problem actually is. And so in our culture, we've demonized the presence of emotions to the point where now we don't feel comfortable expressing them or even receiving that this is real.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll hear things like, don't be negative because you're angry, or don't be negative because you're anxious or because you're sad.
Mm-hmm.
And when we demonize emotions like that, we are training people to ignore very real things that's going on inside of their beings.
Oh, yeah.
You see?
And then you bottle things up, and then, you know, that pressure builds, and then everything explodes.
Right.
And at that point, where it could have been addressed from just the raw moment of, I have this emotion or this pain or this feeling in this moment, and it can be addressed in this moment, and now becomes weeks or months or years worth of emotions that have been unaddressed, and you have, you know, like the Mentos in the Coke, right?
It
just,
right.
You have this full explosion that goes off.
Or total nerd moment coming up. We can deal with the situation while it's a Magikarp, or we can deal with it after it evolves into a Gyarados.
Yeah, that's rough. That's for anybody. If you don't understand the reference, it's not for you, but that's a bar, as Andrew would say.
Yeah.
I hope you're enjoying this episode of Vital Voices. We're going to take a quick break for some words from our sponsors, and we'll be right back. Gentlemen, it's time to take charge of your health with Oak Tree Medical Center. We provide comprehensive prostate care at affordable prices, from prostate-specific antigen tests to prostate ultrasounds to advanced prostate MRIs. We've got you covered. Need further evaluation or treatment? Oak Tree Surgical Suites offers biopsies and in-house surgery. Our team of experts is here for you every step of the way. Visit us at Oak Tree Medical Center on East Street South and Prince Charles Drive, or for surgical procedures, find us at Oak Tree Surgical Suites, top of the hill, Mackey Street. Call us today at 322-1145 or visit oaktreemedicalcenter.com. Oak Tree Medical Center. Caring, compassionate, complete.
Pay your premiums anytime, anywhere, 24/7 with Galena's online payment portal. View payment history, set up recurring payments, download receipts for your life, health, auto, home, and marine policies. Got outstanding balances? Check them online and pay instantly. Guests can even pay for their loved ones' policies. Save time today by registering for fast, easy payments every time you log in. Visit Galena.com to pay today. Galena, always here, always open, 24/7.
Discover the ultimate in personalized healthcare with the Oak Tree Primary Plus program. Enjoy comprehensive primary care, annual physicals, lab and imaging discounts, mental health screenings, and more, all tailored to meet your health needs. With flexible payment options, exceptional care has never been more accessible. Join today and take control of your health journey. Call 816-4-OPP, that's 816-4677, or visit oaktreemedicalcenter.com. Oak Tree Primary Plus. Are you down with OPP? Valor Security. Our brand is honor. With quality services and professional treatment, we provide security you can trust. Whether it's protecting your home, securing your business, or safeguarding schools and construction sites, we're here day and night to keep you safe. From private event security to personalized escorts and expert consultations, our team is committed to excellence. Choose Vala Security, where honor, professionalism, and peace of mind go hand in hand. Call us today at 359-2005 or 605-7424 for security solutions tailored to your needs.
Ladies, at Oak Tree Medical Center, your health is our priority. From early detection to advanced treatment options, our comprehensive breast care services are here to support you every step of the way. With locations at East Street South, Prince Charles Drive, and our state-of-the-art surgical suites and MRI, top of the hill Mackey Street, we're right where you need us. Because when it comes to your breast care, you deserve the best care. And remember, the Million Mammogram movement continues. Call us today at 322-1145 or visit oaktreemedicalcenter.com to learn more. Oak Tree Medical Center. Caring. Compassionate. Complete.
Welcome back to Vital Voices. Let's continue our conversation.
I think we've navigated through a lot of this. I think one of the things that I want to be able to help leave people with would be like actionable advice as to, you know, how they can better manage their relationship, their attachment style. So what advice would you give to someone who is currently struggling with either of the insecure attachment styles? Mm-hmm.
I would first tell them, you have to know it's okay to not be okay. We have to give ourselves an environment where we don't have to be something, mm-hmm. where we have the permission to just be. Mm-hmm. And if you're angry today, be angry. Mm-hmm. If you're anxious today, be anxious. Because mm-hmm. I feel like it's hard to see what's going on with us while it's being bottled up. Mm-hmm. So I call it like a structured breakdown. Mm-hmm. Literally sit down and plan into your schedule an hour where you can break down, where you can word vomit, mm-hmm. where you can take a lot of the armor off of your chest, off of your shoulders, and just see the reality of what you've been enduring. Mm-hmm. Then once that mess is all on the floor, look at it, right? Mm-hmm. Nobody likes to look at vomit. Mm-hmm. It's disgusting. It's off-putting. It has a scent. It has mm-hmm. a stench. But you got to look at what that is that came out of me, right? And by looking at what it is that's coming out of you, you can now start to see the realities that you're facing with a little bit more accuracy. Mm-hmm. So we can't be afraid to be most human. And to be most human is to be emotional, mm-hmm. okay? We live in a society that unfortunately praises roboticism and punishes emotionality. Mm-hmm. So the culture says the less emotional you are, the better you are among mm-hmm. us.
Yeah, because you're stronger.
You're stronger, mm-hmm. right? And of course, the more emotional you are, the weaker you are. Mm-hmm. And so you get punished. Mm-hmm. So we have to be so intentional in creating those spaces where it's okay for emotions to be the main character. Mm-hmm. Okay? The second thing I would advise anybody to do, it's a very philosophical question and thought-provoking, but I'll say it anyway. How do you know that you don't know something you should be knowing? Hmm. Because I can't know something I don't know.
Right.
So it speaks to how we have to learn from our mistakes. Mm-hmm. Before making a mistake, it's likely you thought you knew what you needed to know. Mm-hmm. But after getting your test results back, you realize maybe I didn't know everything I needed to know. Mm-hmm. And you have to be willing to receive the lesson that the mistake is pointing to.
Right.
So don't look at mistakes as a break in your character. Mm-hmm. Look at those mistakes as an opportunity to do it better than you did previously.
Right.
Right? So I don't want people to feel demonized because they didn't get it right. Mm-hmm. Because the last relationship didn't work. Mm-hmm. Or because the thing that I invested in didn't turn over. Mm-hmm. Mistakes are not a reflection of your character. They're just a reflection that you didn't get something as accurate as you could.
Right. Sorry, when you said that, it reminded me of Carol, who said it's like you have no unknowns, known unknowns, and then unknown unknowns. It's just like things you don't know that you don't know. Right. But yeah, I imagine it's a lot to try and navigate through this because of all of the cultural and societal influences, you know, family issues and trauma and all of those sorts of things. Right. So I imagine like one thing that may be very helpful for our listeners is, you know, can you point them in the direction of any tools, whether it be like books or online resources, that they can kind of get get access to help them navigate this process?
Yeah, you know, I have a book that I'm reading right now. It's by Robert Greene. I know it's not the 48 Laws of Power. It's the Laws of Human Nature.
Mm.
And what it is, it's a very unbiased take on just the reality of what it means to be a human.
Mm-hmm.
How we are driven more so by fear sometimes than we are the goals we're setting.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's a great exposure tool for anybody who really wants to see why we're not getting the results we're getting
mm-hmm.
when we try to motivate ourselves into change or we lie to ourselves about realities.
Mm-hmm.
You ever wonder why Sunday night motivation doesn't translate into Monday? Well, maybe it's because we're not respecting the laws of what it means to be a human being.
Mm.
That instead of wasting time to get motivated to feel better about what you have to do, reconcile yourself to the discipline of building habits.
Mm-hmm.
Then once you see your habits producing results, can you get motivated to continue mm-hmm. doing that for the longer term?
Yeah.
So it's all about reframing through taking in knowledge. I think another great book is Atomic Habits
mm-hmm.
by James Clear. It talks about how big change starts with small change.
Mm-hmm.
And I think a lot of times when it comes to big change, as with January 1st, which was 50 days away,
mm-hmm.
or 50 days gone.
It feels like
January is just so long.
It's the longest month of the year.
But sometimes we bite off more than we can chew and we become discouraged mm-hmm. and we don't feel like we're making progress in our goals.
Right.
So it's learning the art of how to kind of zoom in to see that the small things you're doing is actually having an effect.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Shameless plug here. You got to seek out a therapist.
Yep.
Right? I'm, of course, going to recommend myself. But there are a lot of other therapists out there if I'm not your brand, too. And you have to be willing to see sometimes that you may be limited
mm-hmm.
in being able to see your own blind spots.
Mm-hmm.
And so therapy is coming on stream in a more main way. It's always private and professional, and don't be afraid to see what you can learn about yourself
yeah.
from engaging with a therapist.
Okay. So, two more questions. And this first one is more so for advice for people, but also for content. What's one piece of advice that you believe can significantly improve the relationships of our listeners?
One piece of advice that can significantly improve the relationship with the listener.
Mm-hmm.
We don't get in a relationship because of how alike we are. We get into a relationship, believe it or not, because of how different we are.
Mm-hmm.
The attempt to find similarities in people ends up becoming an exercise in self-sabotage because you are literally one of 8 billion.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just the 8 billion who's alive today.
Right.
When you think about looking for the qualities in other people that you possess, or you want people to think like how you think, to feel like how you feel, it quite literally means you're not ready for a relationship. So relational readiness is all about choosing to be okay with differences, not being wrong.
Mm-hmm.
So that we can learn more, so that it can add depth to what it means to be in love, so that we can expand our horizons on different perspectives, different things, different experiences, and see that maybe this thing that I thought was such a limiting thing for me might not be limiting at all.
Right.
It's a willingness to embrace the unknown
mm-hmm.
instead of being so afraid of it. And the only way to traverse the unknown is to be confident in who and what you are.
Right.
So that when you decide to receive someone from a different religion or someone from a different ethnic background or someone that has different experiences from you,
mm-hmm.
you're not threatened by what they're presenting to you.
Right.
And what happens in that environment, you'll start to see that you're more alike than different anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So that right. I think is the single greatest piece of advice that I can give everybody universally.
Awesome. Sounds good. And lastly, the obvious one, how can people connect with you to learn more, to set up an appointment, to learn more about your work?
Yeah. If you want to chit chat briefly, you could always hit me up on socials. That's mm-hmm. on Facebook, Harrison Thompson Official, on Twitter, Harrison Thompson, on Instagram, Harrison Thompson as well. But if you want to book a session, the best way to do that is through my office at Relationship Management.
Mm-hmm.
You can call in at 356-7983-4,
mm-hmm.
or you can WhatsApp us at 467-7505.
Okay.
I have availabilities Monday through Saturday, according to what's in my system and what you're able to do,
mm-hmm.
and we can get it done.
Okay. Awesome. Great conversation. Thank you so much for taking time out of your busy schedule. I think this is something that will be helpful for people. It is, like I said, something that's kind of bubbling to the surface in the online space, and I think it was good for us to kind of get a professional insight into that particular concept of attachment styles and how it plays in relationships.
Definitely. I enjoyed it.
Awesome. Thank you so much. So that wraps up this insightful episode of Vital Voices. Once again, a big thank you to Harrison Thompson for sharing his expertise on attachment styles and how they shape the way we love and connect. If you're inspired to deepen your understanding or make changes in your relationships, be sure to follow Harrison on Twitter at IamHarrison242 for more guidance and encouragement. Remember, building secure attachments is a journey, and it starts with awareness and small intentional steps. Thank you for tuning in to Vital Voices. If you found today's episode helpful, share it with a friend or loved one, and don't forget to subscribe to stay updated on future episodes. Until next time, take care and nurture those connections that matter most.
We'd also like to give a special thank you to today's sponsors, Oak Tree Medical Center, Kalina Insurance Limited, and Valor Security.